Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today I have Milky Tran on. Welcome to the podcast, Milky.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm such a bad host when it comes to these intros, especially for somebody like you. You wear a lot of hats. You're like Jamie Foxx. You sing, you dance, you act, you produce, you direct. You write, you do all these things. And I want to shout out to a mutual friend of ours, Bao Nguyen. He's a director who told me about you a year ago and said, you have to get Milky on. And as I told you in the pre-interview, I was like a little nervous to get you on because I was like, I gotta get my bearings on. You've done so much in such a short time. Congratulations to all the success that you've had.
Wow, that's a crazy intro. Thank you so much. You're making me sound like a larger-than-life figure, but I'm down to earth. Don't worry. No, thank you for that intro, though. That was amazing. So I'm
kudos to Val. I wanted to start with this thing that's because it's personal to me, and then just I cried a little bit when I watched this one clip that you made, and it's the clip that you did about your dad, because I'm a dad. And I have a daughter, and I'm like, damn, you wrote about you getting drunk with him and talking with him for 5 hours. Yeah. And that like hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, oh my God, how does she get to understand like that? You probably don't calculate these things. You're just operating out of like just being present moment. But it hit me like a ton of bricks. And I wanted to ask, when you think of yourself as a daughter, because I want to encourage my children to drink with me, and I want to ask you, and this is a way to get some color out of you and for the audience to understand without, asking the basic questions. So as a dad, I'm like, how do I ask Milky, when you have drinks with your children like that, how do I know that I'm not encouraging them to go buck wild one day, you know, because as a dad, I want them to have some control, but I also, I really want to get down. Like I do some crazy things.
Yeah. We're I do Viet. Some, huh? We're Viet. Of course.
Yes. I'm not talking about just drinking. I want to do some degenerate things with my kids. Right. And, things that are appropriate, like, you know, getting drunk for like 10 hours. You did 5, but I want to do like 10 hours with my kids. I want to keep drinking with them. Right. So tell me a little bit about how that sort of like that mindset as a daughter and how that made you feel when your father really opened up. And, you know, I'm sure that's not the first time. Right. That's impossible.
Yeah. We've drank together before. Such a personal and sweet question. I think, I grew up as very much a goody two shoes. Like I was in the Students Against Destructive Decisions Club. I was president of that club where I was like, don't drink at prom. I didn't have alcohol until.
No, wait, you're not joking.
This is me. This is who I am. Yeah, I've always been like pretty straight laced, and I think that's just how my family raised me. We just had really strong morals of like wanting to be a good person, and like my brothers were incredible role models too. They still don't drink to this day. And then when I moved to LA, I started drinking. And I think to answer your question about like not going buck wild, which is a funny way to phrase it, is something over the course of my relationship with my dad is the feeling of trust and him, like, you know, a lot of my choices of my lifestyle are unconventional. You know, I moved to LA, I chose a creative career, I pole dance, I do a lot of, you know, not necessarily what a father loves to hear, but I think what has made me so comfortable is he like had trusted my decisions and like wants me to be happy above everything else. And that's what I've always been so thankful for my dad, is I never feel like he's not going to love me for what I choose to do or share with him. So whenever I got drunk with him for those 5 hours, it's very special because I think I live a pretty, I don't want to say a life of solitude, but a lot of my life is spent in by myself. I live by myself. I work for myself. I'm single. A lot of my world is my inner world. So here's someone that wants to hear everything about my life, is deeply interested in everything I'm feeling and saying. And so when I got drunk with him, I just poured it out, and I could tell like he loved hearing me share everything. And my dad's a simple guy too. Like he just like goes to work and goes home to his wife and eats food. So I think like getting able to connect with me, and I'm a very like vivacious, alive person. It was a special moment for us to share between each other.
Let's go back to what you said. I still couldn't get over it. You're the president of the what club again?
Students Against Destructive Decisions Club.
You're not joking. Like that's a real club.
That's a real club. Yeah. It's like the club that makes the student car crash event. Did you ever experience that? Mm-hmm. It's like a mock car crash that they have like students act in, and I coordinated that. But to be fair, the teacher that was head of that club was also the video production teacher. So like I loved her, wanted to be around her more. So yeah.
I'm always trying to get my kids to break the rules, because I was a huge rule breaker when I was a kid, and my parents didn't really care. They didn't really encourage it, but they didn't stop us. They're just like, you know, they're just being them. And then my kids are like goody two shoes. And I'm like, I don't understand why. We were at a play last night at a theater, and it was like eight o'clock. We're trying to get home, and the only way out was through the back up, and then it said staff only in the doors. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the staff only would go through those doors, and we go down to the, you know, exit. They wouldn't go through. They said, Dad, it's a staff only. And I'm like 7 and 9 year old. I wanted to like, I told them, look, just trust me. And then I went through and I took like 10 steps. They would not fall. They would not pass and go into the door. They were just so like goody two shoes. And I'm like, guys, I'm telling you, you're with your dad. Like you should be able to understand, like go through this and we're going to make it out. And then once we went through, cut over, and then we got to the exit. And I'm like, breaking the rules is okay.
Honestly, that's such a dad move of you to do, though, to tell them to cut through the stuff. So, it makes me think about when I was at the airport like last week, and there was like a group, like a small Asian family, like they didn't realize they cut in front of me, but like it was like six of them cut in front of me. And then the Asian daughter was behind me, and they were like, come on, Stephanie, come on, come up here, come on. It's not, just come up here, not a big deal. And she was like, no, no. And then I turned around, I was like, go ahead, go, just go. And she was like, don't worry about it. So I think there's like, I don't know, a different level of, maybe when you're younger, you want to be more considerate, pleasant, not saying that you were, but like be a little bit more of a rule follower.
Yeah.
You have daughters, or?
I have my 9 year old daughter, 7 year old son. When I was 13, I was driving, and 15, I drove across country without a license, without insurance. Wow. We just did, like, I went with like two other, like a 19 and a 17 year old. Those guys didn't have a license. They did. They were young church guys, and I was 15, and I was like, let me show you boys how to drive stick shift and the whole nine, because my dad let me drive at 12, 13. He was putting us behind the wheel, and there were no rules. And I'm like, I don't want my kids to like fall into this degenerate way of living like I do, but here's why I say all this, because when I watch your content, I'm like, oh, here's somebody who has no rules, who just does. There's no like, oh, distribution, oh, who's financing all this stuff. No, you're just like outdoing. And that is what we need in the Vietnamese world, you know, content creation, directors and whatever. But the other thing that's really important that you said, though, too, is there's another film director named Victor Vu. And I'm not going to name names, but I'm going to name him, because he and you are the kind of people who are like living in solitude and just cranking out. Just cranking out. And he's done one movie a year for the last 18 years. I think he's 19, yeah. and he's a big director in Vietnam, but he didn't start out making good movies. You know, I mean, you know, we all know that. It's a fact. And now he's a big film director. I went to Loyola Marymount here, but his first two films were like, you know, and then you got to give it to him. You never see him networking. You never see him out partying. You never, you know, now he's just like sitting on the throne and just like, you know, watching the peasants in the film world. You know what I mean? He's not struggling at all. He's focused, you know?
So. Yeah, that's very incredible. And I relate to you just wanting to work on your craft in a way. Yeah. Like what really motivates me is connecting with people. And I mean, it's a very deep purpose for me. And I know I only want to get better at it. So I think what content it does for me is just allows me to put in a lot of reps. And like what you're saying, like you're not going to be great at it at first, but then you always have a new IG reel to post.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like you trying to freestyle. Oh my God, that is so dope. The courage, right? The courage. And yeah, I mean, what can I say? I mean, that's breaking the rules, like 101 right there. You know, it's like.
I think it's like an ability to laugh at yourself, you know? Like, I think my page, it's a personal page, but I guess it's also become like a comedy page in a way. So I was like, I don't care what people think about this because it's meant to entertain people and make people laugh. So yeah, I think that's what made me feel so.
Where do you think you got that? The ability to really not give a about what people think. Right, because most of us who are creating content, like if I had like just 10% of what that is that you have, I'd be killing it right now. I'd be like, you know, I'd be catching up to Milky Tran, you know. It's amazing.
Thank you so much. I bet you can do it because honestly, it's kind of the opposite for me of like what would I be afraid of, really? I guess like when I first had to, like, I attempted to make content, like, a few months before my first series, and I was really trying to be a filmmaker still.
Yeah.
And still, like, be a serious artist. And what I had learned is social first is so important when you're on social media. You know, you have to make content, not always, like, you can make beautiful art, obviously, and that's the goal too, but like you have to play the game in a way. And I think my confidence just as a person comes from my own taste. I like, that's why I always coveted since I was a teenager. I was such a film buff when I was like 14, and I loved, you know, like Charlie Chaplin, and I would watch two movies every day over the summer. So I think I developed like a good taste when I was younger. And when I was developing as an artist, I knew like I was not quite there yet. And then at a certain point, I was like, I trust that I'm funny. I trust that my skill set is strong in like production or editing. And I think it's a comfort in who you are. Yeah. I also blocked my parents on Instagram so that they would not watch me because I want to talk about anything and I don't want
anybody to inhibit. Well, how old are they? Your dad looks pretty young.
Yeah, my dad is, he's going to love that you said that. He's 55 and my mom is, I think she's turning 53 this year. So they're a little younger.
My homies are all their age. Older. All my homies, they're all like mid-50s, 60, you know, that's like the sweet spot for my world.
Oh, like, wow. Can I ask how old you
are? Yeah, I'm 50.
Oh, you're 50.
Yeah, I'm 50.
Okay, cool.
But I try to act like I'm 12, you know, like.
You're cool. You're Gen Z. You're Gen Z. Like,
thank you. You know, that is an honorary bestowing that term, that title to me is I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you have aura, as the kids say.
You know, my brother, shout out to my brother for saying this thing about you got to get the number. Because you mentioned this, you got to get the numbers on socials first. I think it's a new day and age, right? You got to find a way to get you got to raise the numbers. And I think the journey of raising the numbers is a journey of not just about raising the numbers, which is, I think, one of the most important things, but more important than that is to understand what tracks for numbers to raise. You know, when you start making content and you go in all directions and you start to realize what works and what doesn't, you begin to know more about who you are as a content creator. And then you begin to understand yourself more. And then you begin to understand art in a way that is sublime, I think.
Wow, that's really interesting. I feel similarly where I feel like a lot of creative people that are new to social media, they're often doing things that they personally want to do, which is great. I think that's really important as an artist, but I think they tend to ignore the idea of an audience. Like, who are you creating this for? Who wants to see this? Who is this valuable to? And I think that mindset shift for me was very powerful. And it's not like necessarily catering to an audience. It's just a different type of awareness, and you have to watch a lot of TikTok and Instagram to understand like the rhythm of like what catches my attention when I'm scrolling.
I mean, because if you think about, we are artists, right? And there's two things that we have to like be very mindful of. What are we obsessed with, and how are we able to sell and monetize our obsession? That's really, I think, the key to all of this. Like, if I wanted to sing and I'm obsessed with singing, I got to think, who's buying this Asian man's face if he sing right? If there's a beautiful song and voice coming out of my mouth, then who is buying that? Because at the end of the day, my face is attached to it. And if it's not really like a like something that somebody can enjoy, then I really have to like really think about what I'm presenting. Because I can be obsessed with like sounds coming out of my vocal cords and how I'm like expressing, through the writing and singing. But if the people on the other side are not really buying it, you ain't got a business.
I know. That's a really tough thing, especially like living in LA. I'm around, I'm 28 years old now. And it's around the age where people like my peers are leaving LA because they're like learning that maybe their dreams are not aligning with where they are right now. It's the most competitive industry in the world. So I would never like blame them or say that they're not talented, but commercial appeal from this.
It's a real thing.
Yeah, it is a real thing.
It's a real thing. And you got to know it too. You got to know what are you commercially appealing? Are you not only physically are you commercially, but what's coming out of your spirit and soul? Have you been at it long enough to know if it's commercially appealing? What, it's an LA conversation.
Yeah. Like I personally, for me, at least within the past year, I've been focusing more on how I look, which is interesting because I'm a writer director, so I was one of those mole people. I'm just like in my whole editing for like 12 hours. I don't care how I look. Yeah. But now because I am like presenting more on camera, it's like, oh, I have to look nice and I have to get my hair done. I have to take care of myself in ways that I did not anticipate before. But I think it's all a journey.
A journey. And then you go back to Pittsburgh and people are like, you're so LA, because I've had that my entire life. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? What does you're so LA mean? I never knew what that means. But it is true that because you're out here, you have to take care of yourself in a way that is very different. Like I'm in the gym every day. And even the fact that I'm in the gym every day, I still feel like I'm not up to snuff with the standards that I'm watching on the streets of LA. It's a sick proposition.
Wow, you're like comparing yourself.
Oh my God, I mean, I grew up here.
Really?
It doesn't stop. But it's, if you can sort of incorporate it into a healthy approach, then you're going to be okay. Because I think a little pressure it never killed nobody, right? It's fine. I think you need that. You need to, and then you go to then you go to other cities in the world and people are like, wow, you take care of yourself. They could mm-hmm. feel it. They could feel yeah. like the way you dress, the way you carry yourself, the body, all of it is like tight. And, you know, and, yeah. and that can be all the way to like Shirley MacLaine, 92 years old. She's still like, you know, she's still functioning in Hollywood. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's interesting, but at least we look younger than
yeah, exactly.
We look in Pennsylvania compared to everyone in Pennsylvania.
Totally. No, we do. We do for sure. You know, I do have a this thing Viet Maxing that I saw on one of your clips. Okay, if we were to think about that, right? Like, what is, because I used to ask everybody, what does it mean to be Vietnamese? But now I got the better question is, tell me about your idea of Viet Maxing. How do you define it?
Oh my gosh. Viet Maxing, starting off the day with a shot of Hennessy. and then we're going to, I don't know, we're going to have some kung and bun sao and just like a bunch of fun, like delicious party food. And then we're going to karaoke until 2 a.m. And then someone's going to cry. Probably my mom. And I mean, a lot of my Viet experience, it's collected through small moments for me because I grew up in a very white area in Pittsburgh. So I didn't grow up around Vietnamese people. Mm. It was really just my family. And so that's why a lot of my memories of being Vietnamese is at like these big Viet parties. Yeah.
Definitely. That does sound like how a lot of us grew up.
Yeah. It's great that that's universal, you know.
Yeah. You worked at a company, a YouTube company called Jubilee when you mm-hmm. first came out here. I'm curious to know, what did you learn during that time that really technically gave you the tool kit to really do what you do today? It must have had a profound impact on you.
Oh, that was such a special time of my life. It was my first job when I moved to LA, and it was my first kind of full-time creative job as a director, because I had graduated film school, and then a year later, I was working at this company as a director, and I just did not expect that level of responsibility. And so it was like, okay, they trust me. I have to step up. I have to really like put my all into this. But it was a learning curve, because I, at that point, you know, I had only been in film school and directing narrative shorts. And this was an unscripted world. It was a YouTube algorithm world. And I think I think they vet their employees really well. So the community was really excellent. They really strive for empathy and connection, which aligns with my values as a creator as well. And so the process of working there was, it felt a little like a playground in a way. Like, we did a lot of social videos, you know, so it was always talking about politics or the zeitgeist or the social world. So there was a lot to explore. And what they taught me, kind of what I was saying earlier about thinking about your audience, that's what really registered with me. It's like, okay, we're trying to make viral videos. We're trying to see what is popular in the zeitgeist right now that people are curious about that. And whenever we would pitch ideas, it's like, okay, let's start with a thumbnail. Let's mock up a thumbnail. Oh. Is clickable? Is this the title? Is that interesting enough? It made me like really think more deeply about the whole strategy.
The steps too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then just the ability to constantly churn out ideas and to execute them. And again, kind of the thing with being a director is no one really tells you how to do it. Even in film school, no one's telling you to like, okay, now check in with the actors and then make everyone comfortable. And then no one tells you how to do that. You just have to find your own system. So it was a great opportunity for me to step into a leadership role and allow myself to be like, I know I'm this like small 23-year-old woman that I only went to film school, but I have authority here. I'm gonna run the set professionally, and I'm in charge.
Yeah. You know, that is some girl boss, you know, mentality, right? Yeah, I don't even know if that's a good word or not, girl boss, but you
bought that. We've moved a little beyond girl boss, but I appreciate it.
Okay. What have we moved on to now? We don't use girl boss anymore?
I'm not sure what
people lady boss or just a boss?
Yeah, maybe just a boss.
Just a boss.
I like girl boss though, honestly. Okay. Like I love being able to be extremely feminine and still in like a leadership position and enjoy like not having my femininity take away from the respect that people give me in my work.
Yep. And it shows that air, that aura shows on the channel, the whole, like the whole continuum of what you do.
Oh, thank you.
And I think that when we think of Jubilee and the experience that you had there, it looks like you take the understanding of what moves online, but you also experiment a lot more than if you were wearing a corporate hat at Jubilee or not Jubilee. I'm not sure I would consider it corporate, but it has a lot more risk factors involved when you make a decision for the direction of a piece of content. But for you, you don't really have to worry about that as much. So you're kind of in this like beautiful world of like, you can take the risk and you take a lot of risk. I see it, but then you also have the kind of structural understanding of what moves.
Thank you. I think that is the great part of working for yourself is I only really have myself to disappoint, I guess. And I, you know, being your own boss, it is a struggle. I still have expectations for myself. I still have to, like, it was a learning curve how to be a good boss to myself and to treat myself kindly. And because whenever I was first creating, I luckily had like a viral series and it was like a million views every single week. But then I burned out and I just could not like continue that level. And then my videos, because I was shifting my content or I took a break, the algorithm wasn't pushing out my work as much. And I was like, I'm flopping. Oh, and it was so difficult. But I think when you flop, that allows you to give space to explore something new and try again. And it made me think like, okay, if I did this, like, how many, like 20 times already, I can do this again. And it's not on you. It's in you.
Do you feel like you've recovered from that slump or that flop?
Yeah, I think like, it's not fair to have your expectations be through the roof. Cause again, like I was reaching like a million people every week. So I was like, that's the bar. I have to continue that bar. And that's just a crazy expectation. And I shifted my gears because I was making the series called Three Adult Things, which is like a comedic series. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was just filming one this earlier today. I was like, I kind of want to do it again. But I was doing that for a while. And, you know, I'm a filmmaker. I'm not a performer. I'm not a comedian. And I was like, what? Am I a clown now on the internet? Like, I want to be taken seriously. So I talked to my manager and he gave me the advice to make a like higher production series. He said a lot of these creators, a lot of these individuals are getting multi-million dollar deals with these studios. So that's when I shifted my gear to my series Next Session. And that has been such a joy for me because I am, you know, flexing more of my writing, directing skills. It's leading me more to the traditional entertainment path, which is where I want to end up. And also, like, creating is a very, like I said, solo journey. I shoot it myself. I perform it myself. I edit myself. But this time I had a team. I had, like, a crew. And that's just makes things so much more fun. And it made me feel like, okay, there are people that want to see this succeed, too. Yeah. It didn't feel like pressure. It felt like support.
This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan, the sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows, the feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Red Boat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history. These deserve to be preserved exactly as they are. Untouched, unfiltered, they're human. So don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com. You sing, you direct, you act. I'm going to keep mentioning this over and over to the world. You do all of these things. What's your favorite?
Oh, wow.
Okay, while you think about it, let me just remind the audience. You sing, you write, you direct, you produce, you act, you pole dance. You do so many facets that, you know, a lot of people just do one. And you are good. You're good at all of it because the traffic is moving. What do you enjoy most? And you know what? To make the question not too tough, what about like the first one or two things that really that you enjoy?
Yeah. That's such a thoughtful question. And thank you for seeing me in that way. I think what comes the most natural to me is writing. I really like that's just a part of how I process things. I've been like journaling since I was 13, and I feel like writing is like pooping. Like if I'm not doing that, I'm constipated. I'm weird, honestly, for the day or the week. And it just comes very instinctual to me. And I think like for a while being a multi-hyphenate was difficult for me. Like as a writer, like I wasn't a screenwriting major, I was a production major and I was focused in directing. But as a screenwriter, I was like, okay, am I gonna try to get into writers' rooms? It seems like too exclusive. I don't think I like want it enough. I don't think I love like TV writing like that. So I don't think I'm good enough for that. And then with directing, I didn't come from like a photography background that a lot of people come from or a videography background. I like much rather work with a DP than like shoot it myself. So I was like, with it, like in the directing world, it's like you got to work in commercial or music videos when you're younger. And it's like, I don't think I have as much of like that visual edge. And when it came to like editing, I was like, I don't love this process enough. And producing, I don't really like producing at all. You just have to do it.
And that's a thankless job.
Oh, totally. Thank you for producing this podcast. But yeah, and then with music, it was like the same thing. Like I loved it, and I'm singing and music. That was my first love. I wanted to be a musician since I was like 5, and then I shifted gears when I was 17. So it's always been like a deep part of my background, but so competitive, so difficult. And I just, again, didn't feel like I was good enough. But then with social media, it's like now all those things combine together to make it great. You know, like my writing is supported by my directing, that's supported by my editing, that's supported by my music. So I'm so grateful that it came together.
You know, you came into the business at the cusp of, maybe I can use the word, the cusp of the traditional model leaving, the distribution, the typical, the big studios, losing all the leverage to YouTube and Netflix and streaming platforms. Where do you find yourself sort of wanting to go? Because you did mention, it sounds like you know exactly what these writer rooms and, you know, the whole process of making a feature, you understand it all, I'm sure, going to film school and production. And where do you find yourself in this new landscape?
I think that's something I'm still discovering in a way. Like I have really loved the independent process of creation and being like an indie filmmaker, essentially. But again, like when I made my series Next Session, it was in hopes of like a proof of concept to be a showrunner one day. People can see like, wow, great writer. She knows how to direct and tell a story, and she can perform. And then, but my ultimate goal when I moved to LA was to make a feature film. And that's still like in my cards and in my dreams, because it's, there's a different feeling of legacy in a way. Not that I care, like not my legacy, but more so like having a piece of art that really yeah. stays with someone, you know, and people can look at that and be like, wow, that's my favorite movie. And it changed me. And content can change you for sure. But yeah. I think there's more staying power when it comes to features. But also, like, I'm finding myself really loving performing and acting and noticing that my personality is a huge part of my brand. So I'm also open to that. Like, maybe I'll be a TV guest star on something, and or like, you know, as a funny character, or do more commercials, or I don't really know what's in the cards for me. I'm just like pretty narrow-minded of like just going. I'm just gonna keep going.
So if there's two schools of thoughts, one school is vision board. I got to see where I go. I've got to put it up and visualize and see exactly where I'm going, or spray and pray. Where do you find yourself more?
Oh, I'm more of a visualizer for sure. Mm. Like I have like all those things that I mentioned, they don't feel random to me. It doesn't feel like a prayer to me. It's more of like when, wow. like I feel, maybe that's a little crazy. Like it,
no, but it's not. Yeah.
Thank you. I have this level of confidence. Like the audience that I've built really supports me. I've gotten the amount of support has been incredible. And I know like my work touches people. I know people really want to see more from me. And, you know, I've only been content creating for like a year and a half now. Like, it's only going to get bigger. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm only going to get stronger and better at like what I do. And a lot of my work is self-biographical in a way. So I'm excited to just grow older and figure out what lessons I'm learning and translate that to people of my generation and grow with that. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to describe what I think is sort of how I feel about your content. It's tasteful nastiness. You know?
Yeah. I know.
Tasteful naughtiness. Tasteful nastiness.
Thank you.
You know, it reminds me of the early Apatow films. It reminds me of like Superbad, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Pineapple Express, that whole like time, but done in a more elevated, more feminine, soft touch with a lot of gay men, and but yeah. still like really kind of answering to like the modern heterosexual sort of world as well, that's incorporating like the one you did with the threesome with the one Asian guy and the gay man. It's like awesome. I don't want to see your, you know, I don't want to see yours, and you know, like it's where do you think you get that from?
I think I've always been a little nasty. I think I've always been an extremely silly person. And as a kid, you know, like precocious kids, they want to seem like adult and stuff. So I was consuming a lot of like things I probably shouldn't have when I was younger. And I think having my best friend, he was in that threesome video, the gay man. And I think he opened me up to like audacity in a way, and just allowed filth to like the filth in my mind to come out of my mouth. And I think, honestly, the way I'm perceived, because I come off pretty like soft and youthful, and to like, it allows me to, you know, comedy is kind of about the unexpected, and allowing myself to say some ridiculous stuff, I think, is unexpected in some ways. And I think I appreciate you calling it tasteful, because something that I really, I think my tone or style as a filmmaker is I always want to use some restraint. You know, I don't want to do too much. And I think, yeah, it's about the level of taste, because you could definitely be crass and that not be funny.
Yeah. Well, I think in comedy, if you don't have constraints, it ain't going to be funny. Because if it's just like an all out, like, you know, like nasty fest, it's not, you know what I mean? It will hit differently.
Yeah. When you said constraints, I thought you said cunt strains. And I was like, yes, because we're allowed to say cunt now. I don't know if you know that.
I don't think guys can say it, but women can say it.
We're saying it all the time. Yeah.
And gay men can say it anytime to their friends, but I don't think a straight dude, my generation, it hits differently.
Well, it's not like, I wouldn't say call someone a cunt, but call them cunty. Try it with your wife.
That dulls the blade a little bit. That dulls the edge. Yeah, you call somebody cunty. That works. It's
cool. Yeah. And you know what it means? Yes.
Cunty means sassy. I don't know. A little bit. No.
Yes. No. That's pretty. Cunty is kind
of
like.
It's a cousin of sassy.
It's like it, girl, like cool, you're sexy, you're a baddie, you're like, that's like a little edgy. It's kind of like that. But always in a tasteful, like cool way.
Oh my God. That's like a landmine if I start busting it out.
Yeah. Be careful with it.
I gotta be careful. Gotta be super careful with it. Have you been to Vietnam?
I have been to Vietnam. Yeah.
I mean, I know this, that, you know, but I want to, obviously it's a way to ask a question and, you know, lead into the next, it's a signal that where we're going with this next, when did you go last?
I went, I think 2 years ago.
So it's already new. It's like brand new. You've seen the modern side of it.
Yeah, I would say so. But to be fair, I was traveling with my family. So I was seeing like a lot of my family in the countryside and things like that. So
was it your first time?
No. I visited maybe like four other times sporadically throughout my life. But it always had been kind of like a trip with my family. And I'm nervous about this section because I am geographically I'm very poor at
geography. You're challenged. Geographically challenged.
That's the weakest part of my brain, actually. Like, if I got kidnapped, I'm
dead.
You're done.
You're cooked, as the kids say.
Yes, that was good. That was good. Cooked, yeah.
I'm learning from my kids. Okay, all right. So we won't need to get into geographic detail. We won't need to get into that. But I'm just trying to figure out how much of that world isn't you, as you're making content, as you're thinking about the future of what we all do here as Vietnamese Americans?
Mm. I mean, I think since I was younger, what it meant to me was in an alternative life. Like, I still have family there. I have a cousin that's my age there that actually looks kind of similar to me there on my dad's side. Yeah, my dad was the only one out of his family that was able to immigrate to the States. And so I get to live this much more privileged lifestyle. Wow. I pursue creativity. I get to be a film. I get to be an influencer, you know?
Do whatever you want, yeah.
And she just did not get the same opportunities as I think I always carry a part of that with me. And like I said, I grew up in a very white area where my culture was something that I was more nervous to share and like participate in, because I wanted to be American and fit in with people. But now I'm recognizing like my culture and the beautiful parts of the unseen, invisible parts of our culture, like resilience and the focus on family and connection. Like, that's not as prevalent within American communities all the time, you know? And I think, like, that's why oftentimes I write about family, and I feel my emotions very deeply because I know how deep love runs in my life. And I think it can be a more universal thing, but I think like Vietnamese people, like, we love our family.
We do. It sounds like you eventually want to have a family, right?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Okay. So this is something that I'm challenged with. All my friends, doesn't matter how old you are in LA. Mm-hmm. We are plagued with this mm-hmm. problem. There's like a two-prong, three-prong problem. Mm-hmm. We're always working. We're always thinking about what's next. We're always thinking about our goals in the entertainment industry. And it's like a never-ending... Yeah. I mean, because we live a great... Oh my God, we do live a good life. I'm not going to lie. We live an amazing life in a beautiful city, beautiful weather, with a lot of beautiful people options, right? Mm-hmm. But I think like people like you and me, when we really want family, that it's like we want family, but yet we still want to build. And you're going to see, even when you're 50 like me, you're still going to want to keep putting out more material and more, you know, you just, as creators, we have like this infinite power of creation. We think a lot about new things. Mm-hmm. How do you straddle and balance all of this sort of like the desire to like put out so much product at the same time? How do you make space for like somebody in your life? I'm curious to hear what like a 28-year-old living in LA thinks about this.
You should have sat in with my, like my therapy session yesterday. No. I feel like that's exactly what we're talking. It's extremely difficult, I would say, to find balance in my life. Because I think ambition has always been, it was my birthday last week and what Happy I did, thank you so much. I looked through a bunch of my old journals and my old things from high school. And what was really prevalent was my ambition and my drive and my how much I was like striving for success in a way. It was a little startling, you know, to be like that success oriented, goal oriented, but I was like, that's always been me. But I've always also been an extremely like romantic person. Yeah. A person
it shows that, up like, in the content.
Yeah. I hope it's not too like, okay, never mind.
Tell me how you really feel.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't want to come off too, like, you know, I learned this word the other day, saccharin. Do you know saccharin?
Saccharin is sugar, fake sugar?
Yes. Yes. I never want to come off that way. Like,
which just, is what? How does that even... Okay, can you explain?
Yeah, like, I think there's just... it's that level of restraint, right? If you do too much of like this softness, this melodrama, this yearning, I think
that's saccharine. Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. At least to me. Yeah, it's just a little too sweet that it's not digestible.
Got it. So K-drama is saccharine?
I haven't finished a K-drama. I've like watched pilots. Okay. Stuff, but it is a little, yeah, I never want to be, and not saying K-dramas are this, but I never want to be corny or cheesy. Or
okay.
Like,
okay. So saccharine is corny and cheesy.
Yes. Okay. At least in my case. Yeah.
Okay.
But I was reading my old journals and I was really driven and I'm trying to remember my train of thought. I was romantic. We're talking about
the balance between like really driven, but wanting romantic connection, but like figuring all of that out in this city.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm just the advice that my therapist gave me yesterday is to treat my relationships like it's a job. In the way that I am like so driven and I, you know, have built my career how I want it to, I know I can do the same thing with my relationships. And it's just, you know, it takes time. Be careful where you spend your time. Because that's where you end up. So it's for the past 2 or 3 years, I haven't been focusing so much on my romantic relationships. But I also know as a writer, not saying that this is why I'm doing it, but as a writer, I know I need life experiences to share. I want them to share, to have my own life. And it's hard, especially being a little bit more in the public. I'm not saying like people are like hounding me down or anything, but it's just a little it's a little different just like being unhinged. And I've been on so many bad days. I've been on so many, I can't do it anymore. It like tears me down every time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm just gonna keep doing me and I'm hoping that attracts the right people and maybe puts me in the right areas or opportunities where I can meet people that are similar to me.
I've interviewed Ola Pola. from Instagram. She's a Vietnamese Polish woman. Uh-huh. Yeah, and she gives just wonderful kind of viewpoints on dating and, you know, commercial success in your life and business world and HR issues. She's very corporate, but at the same time, like, we talk about dating a lot. And you just said something that triggered my thought of what her exercise was to find her husband.
Tell me.
She came up with 145 points on a spreadsheet, and then she would like check off against all of it. And then she went on 46 dates, and she went about it like you said, like a job. Like, this was a job. She's interviewing. She's like, you know, getting to know people, and went out on 43 dates. The 43rd one was the guy, and she knew it. And then she went out on three more just to make sure. So she did 46, and it worked.
Wow.
So you have to, like, I think really go, you know what? This shit ain't as nebulous as we think it is. There's got to be some, like, empirical data-driven process, like what Ola did. And you should probably hit up Ola on Instagram, where I can make an introduction. But I'm very impressed by the singular thinking that she made a process out of looking for a partner. And I think that when you do that, when you finally arrive at the person you're looking for, you've already thought about all this at this point, right? Yeah. You've already really thought about, like, what you can live with, what you can't live without, non-negotiables, all of that. And then you go about looking for it. And then when you finally find number 43... you know that you've exhausted all of this stuff and you've already thought about it, and you go, I'm never going to find another guy like number 43. And you can finally rest at peace knowing that you found the homie that, you know.
Can I share some thoughts?
I want to hear. Of course.
Just that level of commitment scares me. Not committing to someone, but like going out
to that process.
That sounds like exhaustive emotionally, and just with my time, like I feel so like I get creatively burnt out pretty quickly, and that's why I'm like I isolate myself. I stay in oftentimes, and sometimes I wonder if I've built a life that someone wants to join because I am like resting so often.
Yeah.
So to like give so many people that many chances, I feel like women and men, but I would love your opinion on this. Women and men may be different in the way that they choose to commit, where women are really looking for a perfect person. And I had heard, I don't know what you think about this taxi cab theory that people talk about, of like when men don't necessarily choose the woman that is their dream girl and they're most compatible with. They choose the person that is, you know, like they like enough and is accessible when they're ready to like settle down. And
oh my God, I've heard it both ways though. Yeah, apply to both men and women. So I've heard it apply to both men and women. I think there's a lot of women that look at relationships that way.
Go ahead. Obviously, I'm such a romantic that I am like looking for that perfect person. And maybe you're right. Maybe I need a few more reps in like knowing exactly what I want, because I think I've been pretty open-minded and like trying out different types of people and see how that like fits within my lifestyle. But I am also, you know, I'm 28 right now. I'm like, do I have to move fast so like all the good men don't get married? And so that I can, you know, it's
that is
like,
a reality.
Oh,
that's a reality for sure. But I think another thing too is to kind of like know exactly what you want. So even if you don't like go through the exercise of like dating 46 men, I think the exercise of having a spreadsheet of all the qualities that you want and don't want laid out, so you have gone through the exercise of thinking about it, I think that makes more sense than anything else.
What exactly are the, because I feel like most people are probably looking for similar things. You know, they're looking for someone that's
Really?
I don't know. I'm just not necessarily, but I feel like it's I could get along with a lot of different types of people. And I feel like in a way it's a, when you know, like chemistry is a big part of it. Compatibility. I think like with the spreadsheet, it's definitely talking about compatibility.
I mean, simply a few things, simply. Do you like to go out? Does he like to go out? And like, how does that play in? I'm an extreme extrovert. I love being out and I get energy from people, but I'm not necessarily like trying to be partying all the time. I don't like that either. So it was very subtle for how I like to like really stimulate. Like, I don't mind being at the Grove or the Americana or at a casino or, you know, somewhere there's a lot of people, but I don't deal with. So I don't mind that. Food is another massive thing in my life. I need to make sure whoever is rolling with me got to be able to eat, like, you know, you know, chicken feet and, you know, all this like intestines and all this stuff too, right?
Yeah.
So there's like, that's just two of like the complicated things that I like. And, you know,
that's valuable. No, I honestly, that was a great answer to my question. I'm like, yeah, I guess that's, I have to.
You got inventory.
Yeah. I'm like, how many points is that worth if they like chicken feet or not? Like,
yeah. Right. And then there's degrees of that too, because there's like, then the other breakdown is like, okay, what foods must you have every week to not be unhappy? Like, I need steak at least once a month in a steakhouse. Like, I need that. I don't know why. And I need to go by myself or go with my partner. But there's like all these like little things that as a 50-year-old dude, I'm like dialed in. And I like to drive a lot. And I like to just drive and be in my car by myself, listening to podcasts, music. Mm-hmm. I got to go to the gym. I have to be in the gym once a week. Does your partner want that? Do they, you know, I've been with people who love the gym and people who will never step foot in the gym. And so that makes such, all these little things make such a huge difference. And there's non-negotiables for sure, which I think is very important to a list.
Okay. I'm inspired now. I think I will make a, because those specific things, I'm like, yeah. Because I was thinking more so of like compatibility in terms of like, are they also creative? I guess it's a little more basic.
That's a question too.
Yeah.
Do you want to hook up with like a creative guy or non-creative guy? That's like such a big thing that we don't think about, because I have a friend, I'm not naming names, but I have a friend, like no matter how beautiful the woman is, no matter how compatible, like on a day to day, cool and everything, if that person has no ability to understand the creative process, he'll find out within a few dates and he won't. I've seen this. I was like, oh my God. And this is such a dialed in, very small thing that kills every thing. And it's sometimes it's like the woman will have that creative thing, that ability, but won't be pretty enough to him or won't be whatever enough, you know. But so you gotta know like what that flavor, and just like this whole manifesting business, right? Like you talk about vision board and you talk about like knowing, if you can't imagine or envision or bullet point this person, then how the hell do we
find it
and hone in on that individual or that entity? I mean, because it's it's almost like a meta spiritual thing if you think about it, right?
Okay, a few things. One, does your friend have a phone number? Is he still single? Is he still?
Oh damn! Okay. Let me. Yeah. I think he's. I think he's perfectly the right age, actually.
Okay. Yeah. My psychic that I went to New York with, she was smoking a cigarette. She was smoking a cigarette at the farmer's market. She said, sit down. You're going to find the love of your life in November. And he works in film. His initial starts with a J. And you're going to be introduced to him through friends. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Interesting.
But creativity to me, I think, is a very valuable thing because my life is so consumed by creativity. Yeah. And if they are not a creative person, I feel like they don't understand me, to be honest. Like, I don't, like, in a world, you know?
Maybe we got to get Ola on with me, you, and Ola, and we can really talk about, are you down with that? Are you down to do
I need help. I am desperate for help.
Oh my God. Would you, should we do this? Me, you, and Ola? Would you do it?
I would do it, yeah.
And Ola's an absolute badass. I mean, you can look up her. Everybody should be looking up Ola's. Ola, O-L-A-P-O-L-A. I mean, I think it's just grounds for more content for you and for her, for me. I mean, the three of us. It's I think that would be great. That would be great.
I'm curious what advice you would give me. Like,
oh my God, I need front seats to this now.
I've become like a very like my brand has become very relationship and dating oriented. Okay, honestly.
Here we go then. I think we got to do it. We got to do it. Yeah. Yeah, teach. Okay, Ola, sure. Yeah, Ola's awesome. Yeah, okay, yeah, you, awesome. Everybody, O-L-A-P-O-L-A, you can, and she speaks perfect Vietnamese, perfect English. I mean, perfect. Her communication skills are perfect, yeah. And her videos, her clips are just absolutely amazing. And what she has to say is fun. She's got your energy. She's got like, yeah. She's a little bit older than you, so she's been through the search, and I'm sure she can address the trials and tribulations that you've been going through. This is fun.
This will be fun. Yeah.
Awesome. I'll get this set up. Milky, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being so open, and it's fun. And we're going to do part two with Ola.
Okay. Sounds amazing. Kenna, thank you so much.
My pleasure. I'm so happy that we finally did it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks, Milky. We'll talk to you later. Have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.